And welcome back to the Rule of Three. Two comics, three topics, 10 minutes each. The perfect podcast for your modern lifestyle. I'm Brian Miller, and as always, on the other side of the mic, we've got Tim Slagle.
Hey.
And a little under the weather, a little rough, worse for the wear after your
oh my gosh, week. I don't know what the heck happened to me. I caught something somewhere, somehow. I got my fever up to 102 the past couple days.
That's a pretty high number.
And I slept for 26 hours straight.
Wow. Which, that's damn near hibernation right there.
Yeah, I know. I always thought it would. Yeah, I've always admired bears for their ability to hibernate. But sleeping for 26 hours isn't as much fun as you'd think it would be.
Only a comic could look at a grizzly bear and think, oh, I bet he sleeps well.
Oh, my God, yeah. It's you'd gorge yourself with berries and salmon and then waddle off and sleep for 6 months. That's
It sounds pretty great. I actually might do that today.
That's a dream lifestyle. So I think I'm back somewhat.
Yeah, I'm a little worse for the wear, but back myself. So today we'll talk about your week at Acme and doing comedy after the election, and the new Mel Gibson movie and what that means for Mel Gibson and for us. but first, news story. It's been going around, pretty interesting. Facebook and Twitter especially have been and Google News, I guess, to a degree as well, have been under fire for perpetuating fake news. I mean, there's the kind of larger problem that has long existed of people existing within their own information feedback loops. But I think that's kind of gotten stepped up in a weird way with some of these fake news sites. And so Mark Zuckerberg says, yeah, they're not really a problem. And then some of Mark Zuckerberg's employees said, oh, yeah? to shorten it up. I think it's a real problem on both sides. And I think I really our pal Andrew Lee and I were just talking about this the other day. I think the fake news stuff is really reprehensible. The stuff where you can tell they're trying to get it wrong for clickbait.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Or putting a headline especially in the headline, when the headline is completely sensational, you know right away, well, this is probably a bunch of crap.
Yeah. But some of the more pernicious ones of late have started having, I found a couple of them that will have a first paragraph or two that is the regular stuff, right? Like the first two paragraphs will read like, you know, the BBC version of it or whatever. So you get kind of lowered into going like, okay, I've seen this before. I've read this before. And then you get to paragraph three and it's like, wait, what?
Yeah, that's kind of the Glenn Beck model.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I always noticed that about Glenn Beck is that he'd start talking and, you know, he'd first say, blah, 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 the Constitution says blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh, okay, yeah, I heard that. And, you know, if we don't follow this, then Congress obviously hasn't. Well, then they've been violating the Constitution. Well, yeah, that actually makes sense. And it's said in the Bible that upon the apocalypse, whoa, wait, no, don't. How'd you take me there?
Which is a pretty genius way of doing it, because I mean, if you start with the crazy in the first sentence, you know, I think. Some people have no BS detector whatsoever. I mean, some people are so credulous. But I think the more average person – and some people won't be fooled by most stuff. But I think most people fall in the middle,
A lot of it's confirmation bias.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, if you tell a certain amount of the population that Hillary is being charged with murder, they will say, well, it's about time.
Yep.
It has a lot to do with that. So you put it in the headline, yeah, Hillary possible likely facing murder charges. You put, in fact, I should do that just for an experiment.
or are then you part of the problem?
So yeah, I totally understand it, but it's also a reflection of something else that I think that I think a lot of people are ignoring, and that's the fact that there is no trust of the media anymore.
No.
That there is no you know, people no longer look at journalists and say, well, you know, they're reputable, that they're, you know, they're sworn to unbiased, you know, not being biased, and they're sworn to the truth, and they're, you know, there's certain things, you know, certain rules of journalism that you don't reveal your sources, and you have to verify everything, you know, with two or three sources before you even publish it, and you know, all these things, and people just don't assume that they follow those codes anymore, that the journalism has become activism in the past maybe 25 years. I think it's been longer, but definitely in the past 25 years, it's definitely journalism has become biased in its own.
I think more than just biased, it's become, I think the even more problematic than the bias is the sort of stew of economic factors, and the sort of the rise of clickbait. I mean, journalism has become more entertainment, and thus it's about getting the most entertaining headlines. And then you've got falling news budgets, so they can do less research, and then the immediacy of Twitter and that they're trying to keep up with. So that makes them way more impulsive, way more likely to jump on weird bandwagon stories, you know, terrified to miss out. I mean, how often now, I think one of those despicable things that you see is you go to like CNN and read a story and their sources are like three Twitter posts. I think there's a great website called Let Me Google That For You. And anytime somebody asks you a really obvious, easy question on Facebook, you just send them that link, you know?
Oh, yeah, I've used that.
I use it all the time. I love it. it's so funny because people are so lazy where it's like, so you basically you're saying you just want me to type nine words onto a website. you know, so CNN has become Let Me Read Twitter For You. it's bizarre. And so I'll say now I read two things on this. I read a story. Somebody did an analysis and found that there tends to be almost twice as many right-wing misinformation stories, like fake news stories, as left-wing. However, there's plenty of left-wing ones, and I have in the last, especially in the last week, become extra conscious of partly because they've been stirred up more and have been really going out of my way. When I have been on Twitter, which I've tried not to, but I've seen a couple of fake ones, and I just immediately send a message back. This is wrong. Take this down. You know, particularly I saw one that said Mike Pence said. I'm going to get this right. Mike Pence said that you can take a few days off work if you have an abortion, and so women wanting to get a few days off work will get raped so they can get pregnant. So they can have an abortion, so they can take a long weekend.
Wow.
And I was like, look, Mike Pence has said some crazy crap. And he's kind of a nut. But I was like, this doesn't make any sense to me. And so, of course, I Googled it. And it turned out to be fake news within, you know, it didn't take me like all the president's men style deep dive to debunk this. It was like, nope, not real. And I sent it to the person. And to their credit, they took it down. But it was like, man, I don't know. People are so credulous in their immediate repost. You know, they fall victim to the same.
Well, I think you're talking about something else there, though. Is that yes? On one hand, there is legitimately fake news where it's, you know, like I said, Hillary defaced murder charges, and it's based on, you know, maybe they found some prosecutor in Biloxi, Mississippi that said, you know, that might have said, yeah, she'd face murder charges if she was in my district or something like that. And that's, you know, and they conflated that into a fake news story. Yeah, but you're talking about something else there. You're talking about the Onion knockoffs.
They're not, you know, the Onion knockoffs. What's weird is that a lot of them aren't intended to be comedy. They're intended to push your, you know. They're intended to push your thoughts in one direction or another. You know, the goal is not to mock the news. You know, but this was one of those. This story, this Pence thing, did the thing where the first two paragraphs were all things that he has really said, and so it did kind of lower you into it. And I got to that part, and I was like, wait a minute.
Well, I did see somewhere, you know, I'm not saying that it's on one side, but the article I saw put it on one side that the part of that one of the Clinton campaign's operations were to generate fake news. that would be clickbait for Republicans to make them appear ridiculous.
Oh, like a COINTELPRO kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, like Hillary to face murder charges, and then you know that one goes. You know, then all my cousins send me a get the email link, and it gets repeated enough that it you know becomes true. And then you know anybody that says that is like, you kind of like the birther thing. I believe that the president let the birther thing go on a lot longer than it had to, because he wanted to make people look like idiots. It's the longer the birther thing went on, and he did not give his birth certificate. They say, well, why isn't he giving it? You know, it's he fed off of that crazy.
I don't know that I'm going to blame Obama for that. I think I'm going to go ahead and stick with blaming Trump for the birther movement. but I will say, I think both sides should be really vigilant against fake news, because fake news is bad for everybody. I think if you see something, regardless if it kind of applies to your thing on either side, you got to call that stuff out, I think. If we can't even get... If everything becomes the Onion, then we're done. No,
and we
but
are.
Speaking of fake news,
and we are
going to get to some real more news in the next segment.
And we're back on the Rule of Three. Tim Slagle here with Brian Miller on the other side.
Yep.
And anybody who follows this regularly, or probably anyone that just tuned into it for the very first time, knows that that Brian and I are both working comedians.
Sometimes, anyway. Sometimes working and sometimes
yeah.
funny.
That's yeah, I was going to say professional comedians, but I don't know if you know. I don't know if that always applies either. So aspiring. Now that sounds too diminished. I have no idea.
We need a good modifier.
We spend a good portion of our time standing on stage telling jokes. So there we go.
It's the way that we earn our meager living.
And I was at Acme all week, and it was after the election, and I was a little tentative, because I've had Lewis Lee, the owner of the club, likes to bring me in on election weeks. Because sometimes it becomes hilarious. It is because the tempers flare, and sometimes my humor isn't so well received, and I think he thinks that's funny. So
classic. That's classic Lou.
So there I was, and I was. I found it interesting throughout the week watching how people reacted in the post-election situation. I fully expected, being in Minnesota, that pretty much anyone in the audience would have been a Hillary supporter, or that at least the majority of the audience would be Hillary supporters. And I don't think that was the case. Now, maybe it's, you know, maybe...
Well, there's some Slagle draw, too, you know?
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess so. my ego maybe will not allow me to believe that. But, yeah, but sure, there was some Slagle draw. But also, it did seem that there were quite a few non-Hillary supporters that had never, you didn't even know who I was. And the interesting thing is they're still bashful. Is that when I would make jokes about Hillary, they seemed reluctant to laugh. Is that I kind of had to drag it out of them, and it's and it really goes to what we learned, I guess, in this election, is that people who supported Trump weren't really proud of it.
I think there's two kinds of – well, there's more than two, obviously. But there's the bashful Trump supporter, and then there's the scream in your face in line at the Arby's Trump supporter. You know, there's not really a middle ground. I don't think there's a lot of people who are like, well, you know, I don't agree with everything he says, but I'm pretty cool with him. I'm going to tell everybody that. Like, that's the person you don't see. Yeah, I guess I'm going to do that. Or you get the, you know, yelling through his truck window at you at a stoplight.
Right, but I think that kind of Trump supporter, I think, is vastly overestimated. I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but it's, you know, but it just takes one guy yelling out of his truck window to kind of make you think that they're all that way. I would be surprised if even 10% of the Trump vote are the yelling out the truck window Trump voters.
I don't know. I don't know about that. It's hard for me to say because I get a lot of really hateful tweets and a lot of really angry messages and stuff. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well. Yeah. You put yourself into enemy territory every Friday.
It's always funny to me, by the way, that people tell me I'm a liberal elite who lives in a bubble, and it's like I'm on a conservative radio show right now.
Yeah. I have now. Three people. When I started, maybe it was only two, but now I have three people trying to convince me that I'm wrong.
Yeah, right. It's
like, is you hear all the other side. You hear all the other arguments. It's not, yeah, there's no way you could be in a bubble.
Yeah, and I always tell people, look, I'm not saying I can't be wrong about stuff, you know, but it's like when people just say, oh, well, you just believe that because you're this, or you don't even listen to that. It's like, hey, one of us is entering into their opposite ideological conversation,
yeah.
And one of us is listening to the thing they believe in. So, yeah. At the very least, you know.
Yeah, I'm actually in a bubble.
Yeah.
What was really interesting to me about the radio station, by the way, is that when I was there 2 days after the election.
Oh, did you make it in the next day?
Yeah, I made it in the next day. What was really interesting to me was that they were saying that, like, people from the radio station, because it's, you know, it's a huge radio complex. There's all sorts of stations and all sorts of sales and producers.
Yeah, it's
and
giant.
And what they were getting all the time is people coming into the studio saying, can I just stand in here for a little while? Because this is the only place in the entire building where I can be happy about the election. And it occurred to me that for all the mocking that News Talk does about the safe spaces on campus, they became the safe space for Trump supporters.
That is some interesting irony right there.
And they were delighting on it. They said that, you know, people that they never would have known would come in and say, "Don't tell anyone I'm here. I just wanna go woohoo for a minute or two."
That is interesting. So did you notice the crowd? Did like, was the, say, Wednesday crowd a little more tender, as it were, than the, say, Saturday crowd?
I probably did not have to pull my punches so much on Wednesday. Is that you know, it was probably what you said. It was probably Wednesday was probably a lot more, you know, people who knew Slagle. The kind of where was expecting Slagle to gloat, but yeah, I was fearful of gloating. And Tuesday I figured that nobody really cared about the election, otherwise they wouldn't have been there.
Right, like if you're not watching the results at that, but you know, 8 o'clock at night, you probably don't. Yeah, not
yeah. Tuesday, I figured was apolitical. Wednesday, I probably didn't have to pull my punches. Thursday, I started opening up a bit, and I noticed that there was resistance, so I backed off. But Friday and Saturday, when the suburbanites came in. There was a different mood to the crowd, and it was not. You know, it's. I think we saw the Wanda. You've seen the Wanda Sykes thing, right?
No.
Well, you've not heard about this. She was at Boston Gardens, I believe. They had a cancer benefit, and she got on stage and she started railing on Trump, and the audience booed her off the stage.
Huh.
And as she left, she gave the crowd the finger. So. So, I mean, there definitely is something. There definitely – and it's – I think it's going to be it's going to be interesting for a lot of performers that assume you know, Amy Schumer had the same problem, is that she made a few Trump jokes and got booed. I think a lot of performers think that these Trump voters are this other group that, you know, of people that hide out in South Dakota that they've never seen before, that they don't realize that they walk amongst us, that they truly are half the voting, you know, minus a few percentage, they're half the voting populace.
That's what's so terrifying. I fully expect to be met with a lot of resistance. But here's the thing, I do a lot of road gigs in the upper Midwest. Right. So I play, you know, that's the thing with Minnesota that people forget about. Oh, it's a blue state. Well, yeah, because of Minneapolis and St. Paul. But once you leave the metro, or even go to the outer edges of the metro, that's not a blue state.
No, it's just a domino. It's a blue and red domino.
Yeah, very much so. And so, little... I'm fully expecting to be met with a ton of resistance. It's not going to stop me, but... but that's why I do get, I don't want to say his name because I don't want to give him any promo, but there was a comic slagging on me saying I was boring and all this stuff. And it's like, yeah, well, you only ever do shows in coffee shops in Minneapolis with people who totally agree with you. Like, why don't you try making some stuff that's actually going to reach people who don't already agree with you? That's a real challenge. And I'm not looking to just, you know, when I do my, I've already started writing some jokes on this stuff. I don't think there's any point just saying, he's dumb and you're dumb. Like, that's not funny and it's not interesting. Like, you got to write a joke that's actually going to make people think a little bit about, you know, some part of it.
And maybe we can do that in the break.
Yeah. Nice, nice to talk. Rule 3, new Mel Gibson movie out. Kind of a sentence you maybe wouldn't have thought you would have heard at one point.
actually, there's been a couple of Mel Gibson movies out since you never thought that you'd hear that again.
Yeah, but this is the first one that's got real wide release, though. Yeah, you're right, though. I mean, he's done.
I thought Passion of the Christ was after you thought he was done as well.
No, that was pre. I'm pretty sure that was pre.
Boy, I'm not so sure on that. I think that's when they just started disliking him. Whether or not there was that was before his pullover or not.
Oh, it was before the pullover. Yeah, no, that was kind of the Passion of the Christ is what got people kind of interested in his background and his dad's really dark, weird background.
Right.
But no, the pullover thing, that's what I, you know. Because the Passion of the Christ thing, you know, for a little while, he was like the new James Cameron. It was like, you've got this big movie that you're going to make, and we all think it's going to fail, and then it comes out, and it's the biggest thing.
Right.
But after the racist rant and everything, I mean, I think people even forget. The one that sticks in my mind is when the voicemail where he told his girlfriend that he hoped she was raped to death by a pack of wild N-words. which, as my wife very astutely pointed out, somehow the N-word isn't the most racist word in that statement. It's pack. Pack is actually worse. But, you know, after that, I think everybody kind of thought the guy was done. And, you know, he was in the villain in Machete 2, which was kind of like a cheeky... You know, he would do these sort of weird nods. Jodie Foster tried to put him in a movie that everybody hated where he was basically a guy apologizing to people through a puppet. It was called The Beaver.
Oh, I saw The Beaver.
Yeah, you were the one, huh?
I liked The Beaver.
And then he's in a couple of kind of action-y movies that basically went straight to Netflix. But now he's got Hacksaw Ridge, which is a really big budget war movie.
Are you familiar with the Robert Downey Jr. story in Mel Gibson?
I don't know.
It's a I'm pretty sure this is true. I'd hate to think that I was perpetuating a myth here, and I don't remember my source on this, but apparently, Robert Downey Jr. Was uninsurable.
Sure. Oh, he was for a while because of his, when he was, you know, hard drugging and everything. Yeah.
And it was after John Candy dropped dead during the Great Divide, I think, was the movie.
Wagons East.
Was it?
Yeah, Wagons East with Richard Lewis. Yeah.
Right. If there was a star, a vehicle that was based on the star, you had to have insurance on that star.
Right, and some, like, certain stars like Harrison Ford aren't allowed to, like, fly their helicopter during shooting and stuff
right,
like that.
Right, yeah. Right. And
makes sense.
That's why Chris Farley stopped making movies.
Oh, before he died.
Yeah. And that's actually why Shrek kind of looks like Chris Farley.
Well, Shrek was supposed to be Chris Farley. He was going to do the voice.
Yeah, right,
of that.
But that's why, because they wanted to do a Chris Farley movie, but they couldn't get him insured. So they started drawing Shrek. And sure enough, he didn't complete it.
And then Mike Myers did two voices Mike Myers does. Do you want the Lorne Michaels voice or the Scottish voice? Because that's what I've got.
But regardless, so that's basically why Shrek was Mike Myers and not Chris Farley, because he didn't survive. But I mean, that's why there was a Shrek in the first place, because they wanted a vehicle for Chris Farley, because he could still sell. They just couldn't insure him.
Sure.
And Robert Downey Jr. had the same problem. Mm. And apparently, and I can't remember the film. I don't think it was Iron Man. I think there was one before Iron Man. It was like where Robert Downey Jr. was his comeback film. Mm. And Mel Gibson personally insured him.
Oh, wow.
He fronted
the money or whatever.
Yep. Yep,
well, because they were in that pilot movie together, not Air America, but they were in a kind of a war movie in the late 80s.
Right, right. But I mean, this was more recently.
Oh yeah, sure.
And he said, I'll cover it. And then he put up a bond so that, you know, so if the picture, you know, if he died, were it not for that, Robert Downey Jr.'s career would have been over. Is he actually saved his career by taking that risk?
Yeah,
and I mean, that's just it shows that, yeah, he might have a tendency towards drunken rants, but it does seem, you know, in his heart, he is a decent person.
Well, I go back and forth. I really do, because, you know, you hear some of, and part of me goes like, look, it doesn't matter how drunk you get me. I'm never going to say all the Jews are responsible for all the wars in the world. But then you hear someone like, you know, Jodie Foster, I think we could all acknowledge, probably the as liberal a person as you could possibly get in Hollywood.
Right.
And she loves him. She puts him in her movies.
Also, so, also one of the most Aryan lesbians there are.
How so?
I guess. I'm just making a joke.
But that's the thing, right? You're like, you've got this like very, you know, kind of quietly outspoken, if that's a thing, you know, lesbian and very, you know.
No, I agree. I just made all this up.
Yeah, and then so you're like, well, I mean, I don't know Mel, and she does. She doesn't seem like the person who like hangs out.
No, not at all.
Clan meetings or anything. I mean, I think, you know, so I go back and forth. I've always tried to separate the artist from the art, which some people say is a sham. But I go, well, you know, Woody Allen made some funny movies, but he's a jerk. What are you gonna do? I mean, I think the flip side of that is you go back and find out that tons of the art that you like going way back into history is made by terrible people.
Yeah.
I always think it's a losing game. I can see the thing. I don't want to support them financially. I guess I can see that. But the idea that you're going to like vet all your art, it's like, well, congratulations. You just got a full-time job making sure all the crap you watch is made by nice people. You could never honestly do it unless that's all you did.
But back to Hacksaw Ridge.
Yeah, but I was watching Hacksaw Ridge and thinking, like, man, the darkness in this guy's mind comes out all the time. I think his brain must be the darkest place in America, ironically, perhaps, because it's a movie about kind of like the courage of pacifism. It's about the first conscientious objector to win the Medal of Honor. He becomes a medic, and it's Doss is his name. It's a really, really interesting story and a pretty well-made movie. But even when Mel Gibson is trying to promote peace, the only way he can do it is through the goriest, bloodiest, scariest thing possible. And you just get, I get the impression that his head is just full of real dark clouds swirling around in circles all the time.
Well, yeah, he's raised Catholic. That happens.
And not just Catholic, but like, oh, yeah, offshoot Catholic.
Well, no, I mean, you know, he's around my age, so I mean, he still had a lot of the goth. There was still a lot of the Gothic in the church when he was coming up in it.
Well, his dad is he gets all that racist stuff from his dad, I think, from everything I've heard. His dad is like a conspiracy theorist type.
Sure.
But it's like I just, part of me wonders if maybe what makes Mel Gibson's movies interesting is that he is mostly a good person, but then he also has those dark thoughts and that stuff that he can't get out of him, and that maybe the conflict between that is what, in the internal conflict, is what then externally manifests itself as interesting, sometimes rather troublesome art. Because you look at a movie like Apocalypto, it's certainly anti-imperialist. You know, it's on the side of the Mayans.
Right.
And a really interesting movie. Also, a really hard movie to watch sometimes. Super gory.
Well, yeah, because the Mayans weren't the peaceful Native Americans that are mostly depicted.
Right. But like, you know, Mel really revels in the gore. And even in Hacksaw Ridge, I mean, he's really trying to out Private Ryan as best he can. because I really think that Mel Gibson, in his true Catholicism, thinks that there is no redemption that comes without intense suffering.
Right. Yeah. No, that's exactly what you brought up. It's you have to purge that. You have to purge the evil. And what was interesting to me is that it's because you had mentioned this. You had seen it. I had not. I had wondered if Mel Gibson was actually in the film. It's because he's kind of he can't really do a World War II movie and be in it at this point. Because there wasn't really that many people over 50 in World War II.
Yeah, he's an older gentleman at this point.
It's going to be really hard to believe that there's a 75-year-old man still in uniform.
Yeah, and also I think he's also smart enough to know that at this point, for him to put himself in a movie is to become a bit of a distraction in that movie regardless.
Right.
Whereas, like, you can maybe go see a Mel Gibson-directed movie and not see him, and, like, you can kind of keep those things separate in your mind a little more.
Sure.
Because, sure, you know, a lot of people don't think about who the director is. They just go to see a movie.
Very few people. Very. Yeah. You mentioned even people that are really into film, you mentioned the directors, and it's like, the what?
Yeah, whereas, like, you know, but once you see the face, it's like, oh, that guy, he did that thing and that new story, and, you know, it all comes flooding back. But I think Hacksaw Ridge is an interesting movie. It's definitely flawed, but it's kind of stirring. I liked it. He's a really good director overall, even though I don't like some of his movies. I always thought Braveheart was wildly overrated. Braveheart was the movie that white guys get drunk and watch and feel like they would have done that too.
Braveheart. Braveheart is responsible for the Dropkick Murphys.
And if we can't blame them, if we can't blame Mel for anything else, we can definitely pin that one on him, and that's going to stick.
And I think that's a good note to drop to end the show on. All the episodes at timslagle.com or on iTunes.
Yep, and at brianmillercomedy.com, and check me out at @realbrianmiller on Twitter.
See you next week.
See you next week.